Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
I've planned something extraordinary. Extraordinary and disturbing, that is. You recall what you said about how polar melting might disrupt the North Atlantic current?
Yes.
Well, I think it's happening.
Government has to start making long-term preparations now.
Jack, all you have is a theory.
It's been raining like this for 3 days now.
Mr. Vice President, if we don't act now, it's going to be too late.
I'm afraid that time has come and gone, my friend.
What can we do?
Save as many as you can.
Meteorologists have lost this plane. What is causing this weather?
Are you getting this on camera?
What you see is happening.
JFK was battered by the largest hailstorm on record.
Weather experts yesterday slamming the
in New Delhi. It's snowing.
It's a tornado! Yes, a twister in
this is just massive.
We have light coverage.
There is a wall of water coming towards New York City. Everybody, get out of here!
Ladies and gentlemen, we're screwed.
Oh,
from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a kolachki's throw away from the Polish capital of the Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. He's seriously, strenuously, and severely green, and it gives him a headache every week. Here he is, Mike Novak.
In the main. Right.
Yes, Mike Novak is serious about green plants and all that, but he is not in today. He is actually broadcasting from Washington, D.C. via Skype.
So we've got Denny Sheeter. I'm Sarah Batka. And Rob Carthol.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
So, as phone screener / board operator, I'm in charge of getting Mike Novak here. So let's cross our fingers and hope we got him here. Mike Novak, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah.
We can hear you, buddy.
Right.
How's it going?
We are great. We are up on the mall in Washington, D.C., and it is windy. It is cold. I see some horse poop right over there, right by our table where we're set up. We've got Lisa Albrecht here. Say hello, Lisa.
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, Lisa.
Lisa. Good morning.
Hey. I think by the end of the show, my face will be frozen. So
it is cold. It is really cold here and cold and windy. And we've been setting up for a couple hours. And this is the third location that we've set up. We're at the corner of Constitution and what's the other? I can't read the cross.
15. Oh.
Whatever the cross. There's a bus hiding it. No.
15th.
All right. Constitution and 15th. And the buses are unloading with folks coming in from all over the country for the Forward on Climate rally. Lisa, you took the bus down. What was that like?
It was a pretty crowded, tight trip, but everybody on the bus was really excited. It was a combination of people from 350 Org, Sierra Club, and a number of different environmental groups. We even had an 11-year-old on the bus who I think is going to stop by the show the second half, hopefully, to try to just say
Hello.
Yeah, I invited him.
We're inviting everybody right now. She's like, come on, stop by the radio show. Kathleen has gotten some twist ties, and she's got the big radio show sign here so that it doesn't blow away, which it's trying to do. We're right behind the music stage and the speaking stage where the folks who are going to rally all the people here in the mall before the walk to the White House. Now, everything starts at 12 noon Eastern, which is 11 Central. So right at the end of our show, okay, we're going to pack up the Skype here and the computers and the mics and join the march to the White House.
And I believe it's also being broadcast live on television. So I think there's a link to that.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I believe I linked that to your Facebook page, but if not, it should be on mine.
So what are things like in Chicago?
Pretty quiet. Pretty quiet. On this end. I don't know what's going on in Millennium Park because they're having a sister rally in Millennium Park here in Chicago. I think Lola Marina, she's one of your Twitter followers. I think she's going to be out there today.
Fabulous. Yeah, I know that is happening in Chicago, and it's happening all over the country in a number of cities. So I know that, Sarah, you're tweeting away. Let us know what we're hearing from folks around the country. I'd be interested in tweets we get from people who are in rallies or are headed to rallies.
Okay.
In other parts. Facebook might be a little deserted this morning because...
I will not be multitasking to Facebook today.
Because the minute you take your gloves off, you lose your fingers.
Yeah, mine were off for too long. Say, I don't know, with all the hustling and running around, so we already saw Bill McKibben this morning. He was doing an interview on NBC. There are some constituents down here from Alaska, and they are speaking firsthand about some of their issues so we were hoping they might be getting coffee. I was looking to hopefully go grab some.
Well, let's start right here with this.
Yeah, we have a fabulous woman here. Go ahead.
No, you tracked her down.
Well, so I ran up to a van full of folks unloading. They looked as exhausted as I did. And so I was like, where are you from? And I'll let her tell her story, but I think it's a pretty fascinating.
I'm Autumn Smith, and I'm from Battle Creek, Michigan, and I live 600 feet from the Kalamazoo River where Enbridge spilled tar sand crude in 2010.
Now, that's important because one of the reasons for the rally, and we should have mentioned this at the start, the rally forward on climate change is to get President Obama to a veto to stop the Keystone XL pipeline that's already being constructed in parts of the country, and that would come down and bring tar sands crude from Canada through the United States across the aquifers of our country and then to the Gulf of Mexico, where we could ship it to other parts of the world.
Right. And I think, Mike, that's one of the things that a lot of people just don't understand about this issue. I mean, people that are in favor of Keystone just talk jobs, but they don't talk the reality of what it means. These are not local jobs. These are not safe jobs. And we are putting our farmland at risk for the price of low oil that will not be here. This is some of the most contaminated, dirty, filthy, polluting fuel that we can pull out of the ground. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to talk to Autumn, because she experienced in 2010, just as the BP Gulf spill was getting closed up, there was a spill in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And a lot of people don't know about it. I actually have some pictures on our protesting signs for today that show some of those images. Don or Autumn, what was your experience like? Like, were you there the day the spill happened?
Oh, yeah. I smelled the tar sand crude that night. I was talking on Facebook. What's that nasty smell? And then lo and behold, we find out the next day, you know, a big old pipe burst and the river was flowing black. And the smell was just so sickening. It made people sick. Enbridge was refusing to evacuate people as they should have, according to the MSDS sheet. And so I kind of became an accidental activist because of the oil spill. And I teamed up with a person who was working on the oil spill as a cleanup worker who ended up being a whistleblower and outed that Enbridge was lying and covering up oil and not cleaning it up properly. And then I outed the fact that Enbridge was making residents sign liability waivers that would make it so that Enbridge wasn't responsible for any future illnesses or anything.
Oh,
so
that's
terrible.
It's
been a big mess.
Sarah was just remarking in our studio that it's just unbelievable. And Autumn, the question I want to ask you is, what's the difference? You became an accidental activist, so I imagine you've learned the difference between tar sands oil and other kinds of oil.
Tar sands is the dirtiest oil it is. It's so thick they have to inject it with chemicals to get it to flow through the pipe. And those chemicals are so toxic. It's amazing that it's even legal. And that's why their pipes burst, is because the toxic chemicals corrode the pipe faster, and they refuse to repair the pipe to replace the pipe as they should, because it's all about profit, profit, profits. And any time that that line is shut down, you're dipping into their profits. So they don't want to shut that line down. They don't want to fix the mess they made. They don't want to make it right with the community. I encourage everybody to go to helppa.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-A.org. You can watch the videos of the whistleblower, John Bolenbaugh, and you could see with video proof that Enbridge is lying and covering up oil and that they are not cleaning it up properly. And the EPA is just as guilty as Enbridge because they're allowing it.
Autumn, can you tell us
your daily? Oh, go ahead,
Sarah. We got a question from Sarah. Yeah, Sarah.
Autumn, what's that website again?
The website again is helppa.org. So helppa.org.
Thank you.
Autumn, how is this affecting your day-to-day lives? I mean, it's been 2 years now. Is the spill still evident? Can you still smell it? And what's happening with the river?
You smell it more in the warmer weather, but there is a lot of submerged oil in the middle of the river that they haven't even touched. There's places where they clean up and they redid these parks and made them look all pretty on the outside, but they put canvas with grass over the oil, and you can lift up the canvas and the grass, and it moves like a waterbed. Even in weather like this, oil doesn't freeze. So that tells you the fact that it's moving will absolutely prove that there's oil down there.
That's unbelievable. That's just...
I can't even imagine.
And, what do they tell you in terms of when it's going to be cleaned up?
Oh, they report back saying, oh, we're cleaning it. And they throw money at the county commission and at the cities to try to kind of, you know, shut them up and stuff, or to make them not, you know, feel like they have to be fully responsible, but they are not cleaning it up properly. I know me and John are planning on going back out to the river in the warmer weather to prove once again that there is toxic tar sand crude in the oil, and they opened the river up last summer. I advise anybody, if you visit Battle Creek, Kalamazoo River, do not go near the river. It's toxic. It's dangerous. Don't put your kids by there. Don't go anywhere near it. It's terrible.
And this is my home state. I'm from Michigan, too. Yeah, we're all sorry. You know, the way Michigan is going right now, it's kind of a crazy state.
Absolutely. I did my activism. I also was the one that petitioned for the recall of Jason Bolger in 2011, the Speaker of the House. So that was my next step in activism, trying to clean up Michigan from all angles, oil and in the House and Senate and the legislature in Lansing.
You're taking on a big task, Autumn.
Yeah, I tried.
Well, Autumn, it's a horrific story, and we are sorry that it's still ongoing, but the point is, that's why you're here, because that same tar sands oil is going to be put in the pipes, the Keystone XL pipeline, and sent across the United States. And this could happen anywhere, couldn't it?
Absolutely. And the magnitude of it going through a 1,700-mile-long pipe from Canada to the Gulf is just, I can't even imagine. It devastated my community, and that was just a couple million gallons of tar sand crude. With 1,700 miles of it, I can't even imagine what it could do. I don't even want to think about it. I don't want this pipeline to go through. And Enbridge is an irresponsible company. TransCanada, it's all about money. They don't care about anything else but money.
Well, I want to thank you for stopping by. I want to thank you for coming to the rally. And, of course, that website again is helppa.org, HELPA. And you head right back tonight?
Yeah, we're going to hang out here for the rally, do a little sightseeing, and then we're going to be heading back to Michigan tonight.
Well, safe journey to you, and good luck with getting that mess cleaned up.
Well, I'm not shutting up anytime soon. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Autumn. That's just the kind of people we have here in Washington, D.C., who are just starting to gather here on the National Mall. You know, it's a gorgeous day, and right behind us, and we'll have to get a shot. I know that Kathleen's off running and grabbing some people, but I've got the National Monument right behind me, or the Washington Monument right behind me. Of course, that's right behind the power generator, the portable power generator for the stage behind me. So I think we can take this opportunity to take a little break and let you guys do some of your biz over there. How does that sound?
Sounds good, Mike.
Okay, live from the National Mall in Washington, D.C., Mike Novak and Lisa Albrecht for the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Hi. Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Choosing a tree for your property is part art and part science. City trees have to tolerate some tough conditions, including wintertime road salt spray and runoff. Roots have a hard time penetrating Chicago area soil, which is typically clayey with rocks and rubble mixed in, some of it dating back to the Great Chicago Fire. Chicago soil also tends to be alkaline, which means it has a high pH, making it hard for some trees, like pin oak and red maple trees, to extract the essential nutrients they need. Meanwhile, asphalt streets and parking lots soak up heat, creating urban heat islands that put additional stress on trees in summer. And of course, Chicago trees must be able to withstand extreme cold, too. The Care of Trees can help you make the right decisions about choosing a tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
It is Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM, the Mike Novak Show, a special edition. Mike Novak in Washington, D.C. Mike, are you there?
I am here, and I know that if we're playing the Stones, it must have been Sarah's choice, right?
You know it.
Did you know?
That's why she was so excited about having Mike number one.
I like being in charge.
And she's been bugging me for weeks. She says, you got to play some Stones. We got to have more Stones on this show. So, Rob,
blood
good
pumping.
Job. I was going to say, Rob, good job with the carrot trees there.
Thanks, bud.
All right. Take it away, Lisa.
Oh, well, excellent. All right, so we're standing here now with one of the organizers from 350.org, Daniel Kessler. Daniel, how long have you guys been working on this project?
Oh, my gosh. I've been doing this kind of night and day for the last 3 months.
Really? And what's the turnout been like? What do you guys expect today?
It's kind of a mug's game to guess how many people are going to show up. But we've had overwhelming enthusiasm. I guess the best metric number that I have is we have 160 buses coming from 31 different states. So clearly there's a lot of enthusiasm and people are coming from all across the country.
Now, I saw on the website that there's about 160 organizations. Obviously, you guys have been close partners with Sierra Club. Who else is backing this effort?
Oh, boy, there's so many groups. I hesitate to list them for fear of leaving somebody out, but you know, our main partners are NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and the Hip Hop Caucus, and Sierra Club and 350 helped organize this.
That's great.
And you are from Chicago.
I am. I grew up there. My folks still live there, and I'm actually going to be going home in March to see my nephews, so I'm excited to go back home.
What would you – I know you were talking about the metrics here and how many people were – and that it's impossible to predict just how many folks are going to be here. What would you consider a success?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think we've already had a success. You know, the point of this is to put – the president asked us to build a movement strong enough to push him on climate change, and that's what we're doing. Today is going to be another step in that process. And, you know, this fight is really just beginning. So I'm really excited that so many people are coming, and this climate movement is clearly growing in size and strength. And super excited.
Well, does it make you as nervous as it makes me when he says in the State of the Union that he's taking the all of the above approach, and then he starts to extol the virtues of drilling more for oil and gas?
well, you know, politicians are weather vanes, and it's our job to kind of change the weather, right, so to speak. And I know that's what his rhetoric is now, but when there's a movement strong enough to push him, I anticipate his rhetoric will change. So, you know, I know what he's saying, but people are waking up to the fact that fracking is not going to be an answer. Natural gas is a bridge to nowhere. Coal's already, you know, coal's already really suffering. We're replacing it with renewables. And, you know, you guys are in Chicago. Just look to one state over, like Iowa. It's already getting 25% of their energy from wind. They're scaling up. There's other places around the country where we have these great success stories. And that's the future. And, you know, everyone knows it. The investors know it. The business community knows it. The president knows it. We just need to get him to go a little bit faster, a little bit stronger.
Well, you touched on a subject that's always close to my heart. And that is jobs. You know, last week, Fox News had a report that said, you know, that there really aren't jobs in the solar and wind industry.
And you should know that that Lisa is not really just a radio person. She works in the solar industry.
So, you know, so that one of the things I find so frustrating is the jobs numbers that they claim with Keystone. And just the complete aggravation of the exaggeration of what's happening in reality versus what they claim to be happening in different communities.
Yeah, well, you know, every job in this economy is important, but we need to make decisions of what kind of economy we're trying to grow. And, you know, Keystone's going to create about 3,000 to 5,000 jobs, according to the State Department, according to the company behind this, TransCanada. Those are temporary jobs that'll last 1 to 2 years. Those jobs are important. For people who are at home wanting jobs, who am I to say that that's not a quality job? But we know that solar and wind and hydro are going to create millions of new jobs. You don't need that many people to man a pipeline. That's the point of a pipeline. You build it, you put it underground, then you have a couple people who monitor it. But you do need millions of people to retrofit our houses so they're more energy efficient. You need millions of people to create new wind farms and solar installations. Those are the jobs of the future. And when you look at who the economists and who the investors are betting on, they're in large part, they're betting on the renewable industry. We're going to have a speaker here today, Tom Steyer. He's worth many billions of dollars. He's got political prospects. He's a very smart man. He knows a lot more than me when he talks about this, and he says that this is the future. We got to move away from old fossil fuel industry, away from technology that's 100 years old, look towards the 21st century.
You know, Lisa and I were both at the Do the Math tour when it came to Chicago, and the numbers that Bill McKibben talks about are a little bit daunting and a little bit frightening if we continue the same course. And obviously we have to put that pressure on. It starts with this. What happens after this rally?
This rally is just another step in the process. I mean, people are getting super fired up around the climate movement. One thing that we've been working on is a college divestment program, getting universities across the country to divest from fossil fuel companies. In about 3 months, we've been on 250 campuses already. The Nation magazine called this the most successful student-led movement in 20 years. So it's clear that the energy is rising up from people across the country, and this is going to be a big day, but this is just really the beginning.
You know, that's a really good point. In Chicago, Mayor Rahm Emanuel has been talking about divesting from gun companies, and my message to him would be, let's do it with the oil companies as well.
We totally agree. The city of Seattle voted to divest a couple months ago, and hopefully Chicago will be next. I got to bounce. I'm sorry. I got to go.
Well, that's okay. I'm going to let you go. Thank you, Daniel. Daniel Kessler from 350.org. Just one of the many people here and more filling in on the mall. We have a couple more people here, don't we, Lisa?
Let me grab Eric, but if you could get the studio over to Miles.
Oh, okay. Oh, you guys need Rick DeMille's number, huh?
Yes, yeah. Please.
Let's go ahead and text that.
We will text that to you. I didn't realize you didn't have it there. That's why she was frantically giving me signals and saying, you guys need something there. That's okay. You know what? We have no secrets here, all right, on the Mike Novak Show. If you don't have Rick DeMille's number, you know what? I will get it for you. So I'm going to turn this over to you, Lisa, okay?
All right, great. So I have Eric here. Eric is for the folks at home on the radio, there's a very interesting pipeline that they've constructed that also has some backbone as in a spine. They've got some pretty interesting shirts. Eric, can you explain a little bit about Backbone for us?
Sure. Well, first of all, Lisa, I want to thank you for recognizing the importance of this day and this event with the Backbone campaign. And we're an organization that operates nationally using artful activism, using creative tactics, spectacle, and imagery to inspire and amplify citizen engagement on critical issues like climate change.
And so is that something that you're, like, what cities are you guys working in? And are you working, like, through universities and things like that? And are there specific topics that you're covering, or is a lot of it around oil and gas and pollution?
Yeah. We work on a variety of issues, supporting community organizations. For instance, in our state, we're facing the export of coal through our state from Montana. We're one of the largest transportations of coal to Asia, leaving a trail of toxic coal dust through our communities, violating their health, their safety. And so we're using creative tactics like giant salmon puppets to remind people of what we can lose in this process, and also what we have to gain, like windmills, clean, sustainable future.
So showing people, demonstrating visually that, you know, that the coal ash that's out there creating pollution is going to limit our salmon crop. Is it called crop or salmon ability? I don't know. But so I think it's great. Well, you mentioned one thing too that I think is really interesting, and you brought up Asia. So, you know, the media would have you believe, or at least some media stations would have you believe that, you know, it's important for us to drill more, to mine more, and that that's going to result in lower prices here in the United States. However, that does not seem to be the case in listening to you. Is that, what's your point?
Yeah, and I think the cost to our communities is too great. Last night, we did a caravan around town, shining a spotlight on some of the climate cooking criminals, people like at the American Petroleum Institute, who lobby on behalf of, you know, the fossil fuel industry, and those like the Heritage Foundation, who are funded by, you know, the Koch brothers, who have a lot to gain, but our communities have too much to lose.
Right. But I think people think that this is all for domestic gain, but it's really for international. We're selling to the highest price, and right now the highest price is Asia.
And the sad thing is that there's this elevation of investor rights over the rights of people, over the right of our community. And we're trying to re-engage the dialogue, you know, and ask the question, do we have a right to a safe, clean, sustainable future? And we think we do. And through, you know, this civic engagement, we're turning the tide now.
No, that's great. We really appreciate it. And so you're doing things primarily in Montana, or are you going around to other colleges and universities? Sorry, I just missed that because we had a little technical.
Yeah, we travel around the country working with various communities, like folks in Biloxi, Mississippi, who faced losing the support from the devastation caused by Katrina, to instead build a coal gasification plant, as opposed to homes, as opposed to rebuilding their community.
One of my favorite issues in Illinois, coal gasification, a myth.
Right.
A myth. It's one more way of just pushing the envelope and moving the line down the road instead of saying, okay, you know, there's a problem here. Let's follow clean solutions. And we're not doing that. Instead, we're just moving the envelope, and we're calling it, you know, gasification instead. Is there a website or someplace that people could go to get more information about your organization?
Absolutely. People can go to backbonecampaign.org and check us out on Facebook. We offer trainings, workshops on creative imagery and spectacle, and ways to invigorate organizing and activism.
That's fabulous. Eric, thanks so much for stopping by. And thanks for being out here today. I love the visual of the very broken-looking pipeline that you guys have got over there. So thanks so much, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
All right.
Well, we've got another person here, and that's Dean Holtz from North Dakota. Can I see your sign? It's another North Dakotan for climate action. Great. It's good to have you here, and I understand that you have an interesting story to tell.
Well, I guess interesting in the fact that I'm one of the few probably North Dakotans who are not embracing with gusto the oil development in North Dakota right now. There was a poll done a month or two ago that showed that about 90% of North Dakotans believe that the oil development currently underway in North Dakota is a good thing. And so that implies there's not much concern for the environmental outcomes of hydraulic fracturing and the other things that go along with that development.
So why are you different from your neighbors?
Well, I guess I blame it on my dad. He instilled in me, I grew up on a farm, and he instilled in me a land ethic. And we don't know what this is going to do. We haven't had any proof, but once we do have proof, if it's as damaging as some people say, we will be passing on a legacy of incompetence and uncaring caretaking to generations to come. So we should be making sure that we're not doing any harm while we're taking away generations of wealth from future inheritors.
Now, I should know this, but I don't have the map in front of me, and the Keystone doesn't come through North Dakota, does it?
The Keystone skirts the southwest corner of the state, so no, it doesn't, but the first Keystone did go through eastern North Dakota. And in May, I believe it was 2010, the largest spill to date on that pipeline did occur in North Dakota. So we already had experience with the Keystone Pipeline project.
Yeah, I guess that's the point we need to make about these pipelines, is that eventually they are going to spill. There's just there's always going to be some place, whether we just had the woman from Kalamazoo, Michigan, where I imagine that's the pipeline that you were talking about that already runs through your state.
Well, there are two pipelines. The Keystone is owned by TransCanada. That's the one through North Dakota. The one that went through Kalamazoo, I believe, is owned by Enbridge. So there are two different companies pushing these types of pipelines. The thing that's the most concerning, it's my understanding that they're using the same grade of steel with these pipelines that they use for other materials handling conveyances. And the problem with the Keystone pipeline, not only is this tar sands sludgy, it's very acidic. So you're going to have acid eating away at these pipelines. So the lifespan is going to be probably shortened compared to other types of oil flowing.
Well, and I've read that for sections of the pipeline that have already been built, there's been major leakage, and there have been a disaster a month, pretty much.
Well, there have been a number of leaks, and you know, the American media hasn't, I don't think, reported on the ones. You know, we think that it only happens in America, but there are leaks in Canada as well. And I don't have current numbers, but I would bet there are probably almost equal in number in Canada and the United States. So you've got pipeline leaks. The placement of the pipe is concerning still in Nebraska, even though they've moved it out of the Sandhills region. But what's even what really got me amazing, this is to me such an example of our addictive mentality when it comes to fossil fuels. That tar sands is so gunky that it has to be heated in order to flow through the pipeline. So that tar sands oil that's flowing through the Keystone 1 pipeline that's going through North Dakota is flowing at 72 degrees. Now, you can imagine how much energy that takes to keep that liquid warm and viscous and flowing in North Dakota in the wintertime.
It seems so counterintuitive.
Well, as long as there is a profit to be made, all other considerations are out the window.
You know, I think that's a really good point, is that when we say on the environmental end, well, we have only one planet and you can't bring that back. The other side always says, yeah, but jobs. You know, and that's where it always goes.
Well, the Oil Exchange International, I believe, is the group that put the real shined the light of truth on this lie about the jobs. There aren't going to be that many jobs. You know, TransCanada at one point was saying 20,000, and I think it's more realistically down to 5,000 to 6,000 jobs.
You know, and you hear some of the reports on the other side, it's 200,000 jobs, and suddenly, what is it, 2 million jobs, and it really, it's going to be a lot less than that.
Yeah, and the jobs, again, are they're short-term, and the oil is going to be short-term. You know, I'll switch away from the Keystone a little bit to North Dakota, where they have the so-called Bakken Formation that's got all this oil that we're so happy about. Well, here, it's an extrapolation, but this puts a real eye-opener to me on the longevity of this oil. There was an article in the New York Times Sunday Magazine 2 or 3 weeks ago that quoted experts as saying that the Bakken Formation has somewhere between 169 billion barrels of oil and 503 billion barrels of oil. Well, the U.S. Energy Information Agency said that in 2010, we used 7 billion barrels in the United States and 6.87 billion barrels in 2011. So if you do the math, divide our annual oil usage by that total estimate in the Bakken formation. We have, if we were to draw solely from that formation, 24 years of oil in the Bakken formation. Is 24 or up to, if it's at 509 billion barrels, up to 73 years of oil use from that formation. Is it worth polluting the groundwater forever? The message I'd like to leave your listeners with is, I tell everyone that will listen to me, North Dakota is to energy policy like Mississippi was to civil rights. We aren't going to fix it ourselves. We need people from the outside to come in and tell us how to do it, because we have a government in North Dakota that is as corrupted by the energy industry as Montana was by the copper industry in the 1800s, and as corrupted by the segregationists as the Deep South was in the 60s. So it's going to take a federal effort to change
Illinois
our way.
You just said Illinois coal?
Yeah,
you can make that comparison, that analogy. Listen, thank you so much for being here. A North Dakotan. And how did you get here? Did you go on a bus?
I flew. I happened to have an airline ticket that I had to use by April, so this worked out pretty well for me.
There weren't enough
of us that we couldn't have taken a bus. So
It's a big distance.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. This is Mike Novak and Lisa Albrecht. We are reporting live from the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It's amazing just the different kinds of people that are here.
I'm pretty much blown away. I feel a little bit like we're, you know, broadcasting from a parade. But it's really funny just seeing the number of people and the signs and the banners and the very cold people lining up waiting to talk to us. We're standing right next to a media tent, and so I see that there's people starting to float into the media tents. And
yes,
there's an awful lot going on today.
So we've got more people coming up. We are going to have to get to some of these people after Rick DeMaio weather at the top of the hour. So that's if that's okay. I know that folks are waiting here, but it's nice that they're waiting, that they're hanging around. Hold on one second, Mac.
Hey, Mac.
Do we need to take them now,
Mac?
Well, we need to get to a couple of commercials and then Rick DeMaio weather and then the top of the news or top of the hour. Yeah, something like that. Is that all right with you guys?
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Well, actually, I'm talking to my folks here, too. That's okay, but no, I understand. You guys need to know what's happening as well. Before we get to Rick DeMaio weather, I know that, Sarah, you went to a very interesting presentation last night.
It was hosted at Kendall College, and it was the TEDx viewing party for local food systems and change. So we had a lot of really great guests. Kendall College was a wonderful host, so thank you to them. I know that several of the Master Gardeners went. So Claudia, Mazzola, and Ann Cotta, I know she's a regular listener on your show, and Jeannie Radek were all there. But it was really, really good. They showed some clips from upcoming movies that are expected out. One is Food Chains. That's going to be really interesting. That talks about migrant workers. And just a penny a pound more would make a world of difference for them. Just one penny a pound. And what is the cost? What's the social cost of the labor and buying organic produce? You have to think about those social costs as well.
Of course. I know that there have been movements to get another penny for tomatoes in Florida. A couple of years ago, I remember there was a big flap over whether Burger King and other chains would be willing to pay that extra penny. And it does make a huge difference. And I think, Rob, at some point, we're going to have to plug one more time today the big Commie Garden FabCon
coming up in one more week. Registration is getting pretty close, but there may still be a couple spots left on that, and it'll be at Green Tech on Sacramento Avenue next Saturday on the 23rd of February, Connecting Community Gardeners Conference, and we can go into that a bit more later too.
Yeah, I think we should talk about it a little bit later on, because I know a lot of community garden folks out there are interested in it. I think we've got around 200 people already registered for the conference at the Chicago Center for Green Technology next Saturday. But
The point is that folks want to learn how to do community gardens. They won't.
Okay, well, I think that may be a good time to go ahead and take a break. Rick DeMaio weather coming up at Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM, the Mike Novak Show. And, well, I think right now we're having a little Skype issue in trying to get Mike. Let's just try. Mike, are you there? Okay, so we will be there momentarily. We're going to go to the phones. Rick DeMaio on the line. Let's grab Rick. Rick DeMaio, are you there?
Yeah, good morning. How are you guys doing? It's the normal technical glitches when you try to do a broadcast out of a tent on the mall in Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah, yeah. We're breaking ground here. This is a Skype cast. So, you know, I think it's a first, you know?
That's great. You know, when you do things for the first time, you learn how to do them better the second time and the third time around. So as long as you're getting the message across, that's the important thing. I think Mike and Lisa obviously have had a great number of guests. And, you know, I remember when I was a sophomore at Oswego State University in upstate New York, 1982, we decided a bunch of us and a couple of organizations from the upstate campuses went up into Ottawa, Canada to what we called back then refuse the cruise missile. That's when the cruise missile was a big part of, you know, the military buildup of the United States and, of course, you know, Russia, and we had the Cold War going on. And it wasn't so much that, you know, we got everything done that we wanted to get done, but it was a movement. You met a bunch of people, you made some contacts, you exchanged phone numbers. And next thing you know, within about a year, we were actually a part of the largest gathering of people, basically upset and debating and basically, you know, yelling and screaming at times. That, you know, too much was too much. And I think there were 700,000 of us that marched in New York City into Central Park, basically calling for an end of the nuclear arms race. And, you know, within 2 or 3 years after that, the Cold War pretty much came to, you know, not a screeching halt, but pretty much a slow halt. And I think we felt that we had a part of it. And it was, to this day, something that I always remember and something I always like to share with my students.
Rick DeMaio, you, sir, are a pro. I can tell you've been in this industry for a while. We had a glitch. You talked. You gave us some time. I think we got Mike back right here. Mike, are you there?
I think we're here. We're here. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
And we can hear you just fine.
Denny?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we're back. We had a little Skype action here, and it, you know, you when you hear the your headset's going whip, 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 then you realize, oops, the Skype's gone away.
Well,
Rick,
like,
how
like
are you?
Good. It sounds like you're playing the Beatles 45 in reverse there. You got to stop doing that during a live broadcast.
Well, you know, Paul is not the one who's dead.
Yeah, I don't want to hear I buried Rick DeMaio on the show. But
well,
you know, maybe
I'll give
maybe
you a forecast here from DC. I would say partly cloudy skies, breezes. Mm-hmm. You know, temps in the low 30s, basically,
yeah,
today, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, I mean, that observation seems to be pretty well. And Mike, it's amazing that that you guys are actually deducting some of that space debris coming down on us over the last couple of days. That it didn't interrupt with the
get interrupted with this amazing Skype broadcast. Isn't it something to hear about one asteroid or one meteor, we'll call it, you know, hitting parts of central Russia, another one coming into the western part of the United States? It almost makes you think we're a little bit more vulnerable than we think.
Oh, my goodness. I saw the videos the other night online. There was a series of six videos from car cams in Russia. It was just unbelievable. You know, I don't know what's more unbelievable. The fact that this meteor came into the atmosphere, or that so many Russians have car cams.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know you wonder what they're doing with those things. But, you know, as I was telling some of my students, is that the fact that you had the atmospheric conditions and the timing of the day, you know, perfectly right to see something like that. Because think about it. It could have been, you know, a cloudy day. It could have been a snowy day. It could have been a day where you saw nothing but heard a lot. It could have been at night where it was overcast. You saw nothing but just, you know, there was this big flash in the sky. But you actually got to see this meteor, you know, crashing, you know, down through the Earth's atmosphere. It goes through the mesosphere first, which is about 30 to about 55 miles up. Then it goes through the stratosphere and then through the troposphere. And it made it through all of those. It was probably a lot larger when it entered, you know, the Earth's atmosphere up around the exosphere, which is about, you know, 1,500 miles up. But it was pretty amazing that something like that made it all the way down into the atmosphere. And some guy who was getting up to go to his, you know, part-time job in south central Russia, next thing you know, his video has gone viral around the world, and he said hello to space debris coming through. So it really humbles you as a person living on this planet, and I think it kind of, you know, dovetails well with what we're talking about, with whether or not we're trying to bring, you know, natural gas to not so much a screeching halt. I hear people saying that fracking needs to end. Fracking's not going to end. Fracking's here. It's here to stay. But what we have to do is we have to make sure that it's regulated. We have to make sure that it's safe. We have to make sure that the people who are being not so much inundated by, hey, we want to take your land and put fracking on it. We want to make sure that they're getting a fair price. And we also want to make sure that the groundwater that's near some of this fracking is not ruined forever. I think what we got to make people think about is the fact that you're not going to stop progress. You're just going to make it better, and you're just going to make it safer. And one of the reasons why I think, you know, Obama said no to the Keystone Pipeline in the beginning is he's a politician. He understands that in 2014, there's going to be another set of elections for senators who are going to be in states, or are in states, rather, where that pipeline is going to be, you know, impacted, or at least is going to be impacting their vote. And he's got to try to get as much for his people as possible. While it may not go through, we don't know that. But at the same time, it's something that we'll probably end up needing, because the demand for energy in this country and the world keeps increasing. And unless we figure out how to make some of the alternative energy not so much usable, you know, tomorrow or in 10 years, but not so much usable, but also sustainable. And I think that's what a lot of people get really upset about, is how do you make solar energy sustainable? How do you make wind energy sustainable? We know that the other ones are, because it's in the ground and we can dig it up. So it's a real big mindset change that you have to attempt to, you know, bring across the people's minds. And that's, I think, your biggest challenge there in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you know, Rick, you made the point that the fracking is not going away. Well, for one thing, it has to be safe before we do that. And the other thing is, you're right, the oil's not going away soon, but we can't. We know that's going to continue, because billions and billions and billions of dollars are being made by oil companies. So now let's focus on the alternative energy. Let's start pumping some money. We prop up the oil companies. Why can't we prop up the clean energy companies? That would help.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I really think that's what President Obama is trying to do. I think he's going to really do a good job. And I predicted this last year, that once he got into his second term of office, you can see his agenda has shifted more towards social issues. And I think they're going to probably continue in that realm from a standpoint of alternative energy and clean energy, because now he knows that he can do it, and now I think he knows that he has to do it to build a legacy. I mean, granted, we know that he's a great person and he's got a lot of people around him that can help him do it, but at the same time, he also knows that he has a legacy that he has to live up to, and every politician, that's probably one of their number one things that they have to at least think about. is how people are going to judge them once they're out of office. And he's going to have a long time being out of office because he's, you know, he's such a young president.
Well, we're talking about energy, and part of energy in the world is weather, weather energy. What's going on across the United States?
Well, you know what? It's amazing, Mike, because now we have the possibility of, you know, yet another large storm system, you know, coming into the middle part of the country. It looks like it's going to be here probably by about maybe Wednesday or Thursday. Earlier looked like this could end up being a big snow for Chicago. But now it appears it may just end up being more of a wet snow, kind of a rain system. So I know you're heading back here, I would think, probably by Tuesday is what I'm thinking, Mike. Is that right?
I'm back probably Monday evening. Why? When is this going to – because I'm driving back. So when's this going to happen?
Oh, you'll be fine Monday evening, just kind of a windy, kind of a cold event. But it looks like the stuff that does eventually get in here by Tuesday, we'll get a little bit of wet snow. By Wednesday, we'll get another little system coming in. I'm actually by Thursday, rather, another little system. But what's nice, Mike, is the pattern is setting up for us that is going to be much, much different compared to last year. Remember last year, we were heading from February into March. It was a very dry pattern, a very warm pattern. That's not what we're going to be happening this year.
Okay.
Like it's
well,
going to be more of a wet pattern.
That's good.
Right?
That's a good thing. I mean, we're feeling the cold, and it's nice to have that for an extended period in a winter when we should be having it.
Yeah, yeah. It really looks like that this February is, in the second half of February, is probably going to be giving us more so in the way of some wet systems. From what I can tell, all the climate prediction models are suggesting that we're going to be getting into a wetter pattern between now and probably into early March. Remember last year we had nothing but dry weather, and that really, really hurt some of the farmers in parts in Nebraska, in parts in Kansas, in parts of Oklahoma and Texas. Those are the ones that really rely on the precipitation getting into that reservoir called the Ogallala Reservoir. That's the one that a lot of people are upset about. Could be contaminated if the XL pipeline goes through that region. One of the things that we have to be sure of is that if they do begin to drill in those areas, that the pipeline does not have any problems where it could crack or break or leak into the soil, obviously leak into the groundwater. And that reservoir that feeds almost five states in the northern plains is predicted it could end up drying up in about 80 to 90 years. And we don't want to accelerate that anymore by putting the pipeline close enough to that area that hasn't been proven to be safe enough and regulated, obviously.
And how are we standing? And I know I'm looking at the clock here. I'm trying to keep track. And, Denny, I know you're going to help me with this. I got 10:55 here. How are we looking with the water level? Because I just read another article the other day about Lake Michigan being perilously low.
You know, it's amazing because even if we get, Mike, even if we get normal rainfall, normal snowfall between now and probably the end of the winter, that's not going to help us. This is a problem that's been going on now for almost 5 years. We're at its lowest level since the Army Corps of Engineers has been measuring the level of the lake. It's down to its lowest point. I think it's down almost 17 inches from where it was last year. So we would really need to have some significant rain, some significant snowfall across northern Wisconsin, the upper peninsula of Michigan, all of Michigan, to get Lake Michigan and Lake Huron up to even close to where we can say we're not worried about it. But come this spring, come early summer, when we really start to think more about recreational boating, that's going to be the problem for some of the boaters and some of these smaller, I want to call it nooks and little bays, particularly across essential areas, or I should say areas of coastal Wisconsin. Lake Michigan is probably not going to be affected. I know some people think it well is at a certain point where the Chicago River is going to go back into the lake. You recall over 100 years ago, we dredged the Chicago River, so the lake goes back to the lake. I don't think that's going to happen. But the bottom line is, it is a concern. I think it does show us, and I've mentioned this many times to students, oftentimes you have to take the cues of Mother Nature now. If you see some of these things are changing due to these rapid ups and downs and extreme variabilities, you change your platform. You go, you know what? Maybe this could happen. I think oftentimes we don't see the forest for the trees. I know it's a cliche term that we tend to, you know, lean on quite a bit. But like last year, if you saw that the trees bloomed out a month early because it got warm, I don't think anybody expected that. I think that's what we need to really be key about, is to, you know, pay attention to what's going on outside our window. And I think last summer, and obviously with the lake levels this year, definitely a wake-up call.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we need to get to a forecast for Chicago.
Yeah, and you know what, Mike, real quickly, I had two students from the School of the Art Institute, where I teach part-time, came into my classroom on Wednesday morning and Wednesday afternoon. They are actually at the march today, and they came in and wanted to, you know, solicit some, you know, maybe some interest from other students. And they talked to the students. I gave them a floor for about 10 minutes. And obviously, as you know, there's an march going on here in Chicago. And they're able to get, you know, probably a good 10 to 20 kids from each class. So what you're bringing to Washington, what those kids brought to the classroom, hopefully will filter out into the streets of Chicago later this morning. I think that's a good thing all the way around. So bottom line, a lot of sun today, temperatures mid-30s, rain tomorrow mid-40s, and then a little bit of wet snow on Tuesday. Wednesday looks good, and it looks like a rain-snow system on Thursday with maybe some heavier snow north of us late Thursday afternoon, Mike.
Well, Rick DeMaio, it's great hearing from you. I'm glad that the Skype technology is working here.
Yeah, watch out for those meteors and have a successful rally, Mike.
You know, it's just getting stranger and stranger out there, isn't it?
The world is becoming a very small place, isn't it?
And Rick, yeah, are we going to see you in studio next week?
Yes, I'll be in the studio next week taking phone calls from anybody who wants to talk anything about weather and the natural environment and climate change and climate variability. I'll be all ears.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Oh, thanks for mentioning that, Sarah. I'd forgotten completely about it and all the craziness here. We'll talk to you in studio next week, Rick.
In studio.
All right. And I'm going to let you guys, Denny and Sarah and Rob, take it away. Lisa and I are on the National Mall in Washington, D.C., and we're going to have some news, and we'll be back after that.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Well, I am not Mike Novak. I'm actually the phone screener. My name is Dennis, running the board for Mike Novak while he is in Washington, D.C. Mike, are you there?
I am here.
How's it going, buddy?
We're back on the National Mall. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah. Yep.
In front of the Washington Monument. We're getting a few more clouds here, but it's a bright day. And Lisa Albrecht from the show is here with me. And while we're starting things in the second hour, you gotta love the technology here. Let's do this now, because I might forget later on. Everybody involved. First of all, you guys in the studio, I really appreciate all the help. Sarah Batka, because we've commandeered her computer to run the Skype into the board. And Rob Carthall, who climbed out of his deathbed to come into the studio today. How you feeling, Rob?
Doing real good.
And I'm glad you're here, and they're helping out with this. And, of course, Denny, who has been helping put this broadcast together all week.
Did you hear the term I came up with, Mike?
What's that?
Skypecast. That's cool, right?
Skypecast. I think that might have been used before. I'm not sure.
No, it hasn't.
Nobody's ever thought of it.
Made it up right now.
And, of course, Mike Sanders and Matt Cummings. So all the folks who have helped put this together so that Lisa and I could come to the National Mall, as we mentioned before, the corner of Constitution and 15th, right here, where it all happens in D.C.
And
we're
really
right outside the media tent and right behind the stage where the big rally is going to start in an hour.
Yep. People are starting to filter in. We've seen all the big names. Michael Bruin from Sierra Club is here. Just saw
Bill McKibben was right behind us a second ago.
The Hip Hop Masters here. Everybody's in the house.
And of course, our friends, Mac Austin and Kathleen Thompson, they're out corralling people.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Oh, so sorry to interrupt. We kind of didn't go over this. We got someone on the line who wants to talk about the pipeline. So I'm gonna let you handle that. Do whatever you want to do on that. I just wanted to throw that out there. Sorry. Go ahead.
Have to take Cap first.
Okay. We'll take a quick phone call and then we'll get right to Cap.
Okay.
And this is Ken from Joliet.
Yeah, I remember reading a book back in the late '60s, early '70s, written by the Canadians called "Close the 49th Parallel." I think it's time that we do it. if they want this stupid pipeline that can run it through the Canadian Rockies and through the virgin forest of British Columbia, and if there's an oil spill, it'll ruin Vancouver Island, not the United States, you know?
You know, there's an argument about that because there are Canadians who don't want that to happen, and they're worried about their own pristine lands in British Columbia and those forests and those mountains, and that's part of the argument is, okay, where are we going to run this? Who's going to risk the environmental degradation? Is it going to be the Canadians or is it going to be the Americans?
Yeah, they should keep their own degradation. And, look, we've got that Alaska pipeline and those, that oil doesn't come to the United States. It goes off to Japan and China, you know?
Well, the problem is it's not Canada versus the United States, as Lisa will attest to. It's the transnationals. I mean, it's the money people. It's those people pulling the strings and making those kinds of decisions. But the point of this rally here, Ken, is that we have an opportunity to say no. And that's why we're here. What we're trying to do is tell President Barack Obama, no, just say no to the Keystone XL. And then if Canada wants to run it and if the transnationals want to buy out the Canadian politicians, knock yourselves out. But we don't want it here.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt banned oil to Japan and banned scrap metal to Japan prior to World War II. We could ban the export of oil from the United States.
Ban the export of oil to the United States or from the United States? What are you saying?
Ken? I think he's gone.
Yeah, we lost Ken.
All right, he's gone. All right. Well, and if anybody wants to weigh in, the number, of course, 773-763-9278. We're happy to hear from people. I'd be happy to hear. Are we just before we get to Kat, Sarah, have we gotten any tweets this morning of interest?
We do have Snappy J Dog. She's got a seed swap coming up in the Forest Park Community Garden on March 24th.
That's not about oil. That's about
No. We're here in D.C. being cold. We don't talk about oil.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. All right, well, let's do it. Let's introduce our guest here on the National Mall. Lisa?
All right, so we have Kat, and I'm sorry, I'm going to screw
Dan Hammond.
And she's from Michigan, and they actually have a lawsuit related to all this. Kat, can you explain that a little bit for us?
Yes, I live in Barry County in southwest Michigan, and recently our governor and our Department of Natural Resources.
Are you getting us? You're not getting us? Hold on.
We got you now.
Hello?
We got you now. We're good.
Okay. Let's go back to Kat. Let's start that
just
again.
Just don't move.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
I'm Kat Van Hammond. I'm from Barry County in southwest Michigan, and recently, over the last year, our governor and our Department of Natural Resources has leased almost all of our state land to the oil and gas industry for the possibility of deep well hydraulic fracturing. And where I live, it's a beautiful farm and recreational area. We have 23,000 acres of state land that was auctioned off in our county. And I also live and work at a camp and retreat center that teaches peace, social justice, environmental stewardship, and cooperation called Circle Pine Center, and our neighbors, and we neighbors state land. So our neighbors have leased their land privately, and the state land next to us is also developable. So the people in our community formed a nonprofit organization called Michigan Land Air Water Defense, MLAWD, M-L-A-W-D. And we, along with the neighboring county, Allegan County, have launched a precedent-breaking, if we win especially, lawsuit against the state of Michigan. And the issue is that our state lands are held in the public trust, and that leasing the mineral rights, it was done in a very stealth manner. You know, we didn't even know. There was like tiny little notification and about the auctions. So there was no public input, very little public input. And so basically we're arguing that
the land is held in our public trust and that they are not upholding the public trust. And it's a deeper issue because basically, along with our lawyer, Mr. Olson, and his law firm, we are talking about the fact that our commons, our water and our air and our land is being stolen from us and privatized little by little. So if we win this case, it will be a big step in the right direction to assert that the commons belongs to all of us and that clean air and clean water is our right and that people should not benefit and profit on the backs of people that live in a particular area, like, you know, where the fracking is in heavy in Pennsylvania or whatever.
And I want to make sure I understand this. Was this public? Were these public lands?
Public lands.
At 23,000 acres. Uh-huh. And then they were leased to
oil and gas
by
the Michigan government. Yeah, there was entrusted with the public trust to hold those lands sacred for public use. Correct. And, you know, they're arguing that the public will benefit from the money.
Blah, blah, blah.
The money actually goes to fund the DNR. You know, there's not public funds for the DNR, right? Uh-huh. So basically, the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, is basically paid for by the oil and gas industry. Mm-hmm. So, like, whose side do you think they're going to be on? Like,
yeah.
So we consider this, you know, so we're trying to set an example that will be far-reaching, that if we can win this case, other counties can build on this case.
Or maybe other states can.
And other states.
So you're looking for a legal precedent here.
We're looking for a legal precedent. And also, so if you're interested in helping us set this legal precedent, please look up our website and you can donate because it's, as you might imagine,
and it is.
It's quite expensive.
What's the website?
It's MLAWD, Michigan.org, Michigan Land Air Water Defense.org.
MLAWD.
Correct.
.org, because Sarah in the studio is going to tweet that out.
Great.
Right now. And we want to make sure you got that right, Sarah?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Okay, great.
So even if you don't live in our county, supporting this act would be a very powerful thing. If we can win this lawsuit, it would be very helpful to the whole state of Michigan and other states and other communities that would like to do this. But it also is bringing this conversation up about the commons and our, because right now our water is being threatened. Our water is being privatized left and right. And it's
yep.
happening also in a stealth manner. And this needs to come to the awareness of everyone that the things that we depend on as our common life, what, you know, air, water, we're getting down to the basics here, that it's being privatized.
Right,
and
exactly.
Sold.
And these are conversations that I think, you know, the country had over 100 years ago. You know, when we, those of us in Chicago, the fight to keep Lake Michigan, Lake Michigan, and to not allow it to be privatized and not allow it to be commercial space. I mean, all of that was at one point supposed to be shipping yards. And it seems crazy to me that here we are again having the same conversations. The government's responsibility, in my mind anyway, is to protect those things from business. Business has its own agenda. But the government needs to protect us and needs to make sure that our waterways, our land, our air is safe for us, not for the next 5 years, but for 100 years. And it's frustrating. I'm really proud of you guys for the work that you're doing and making sure that it's heard and that it's stopped. So thank you so much, Kat.
Well, thank you very much.
And
appreciate
you know,
it.
And you don't know this, but we talked earlier. We had another woman on from Michigan who was talking about
from
the spill in the Kalamazoo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm from Michigan. It just breaks my heart to see what's happening in my home state.
Yeah.
You know, I live in Chicago. I've lived there for a long time, but you have that attachment to your home state. I can't believe what has happened to the state of Michigan. It's mind bending and just sad.
It's under a huge threat right now, a huge threat. And we could become the next Pennsylvania because, Michigan is to a large degree shale. And if you see the map, it's, you know, they're basically, they're going for it. 1,000 people have leased their land in my county. There's 300 lakes in my county. Our water is at risk. And anyway, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and it's a big issue.
Well, we're glad you came to D.C., and we're glad you're here marching.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Very glad.
Proud to be walking beside you, Kat. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And then that's a great segue right into Pennsylvania, because we have some folks here with some signs that are...
Let's bring them over.
We have some signs here. For those of you that can't see, some unbelievable...
Yeah, because we don't have video here. We just have...
We are Skyping, but video-free. And there's...
Let's bring it over. What we're doing is we're staging... Come on. Even though we're radio, we're actually staging a visual. And if we could get Kathleen to get some photos... Okay. Come on over here. Who's speaking for the group here?
Frank and Jim, come over here. Come over.
Kathleen, who are we talking to here?
All right, so we have a number of folks from Pennsylvania.
No, I know. Do we have a spokesperson? Rebecca. Okay.
We are from Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, which is a very active Marcellus gas field in the state. As an aside, DEP, the Department of Environmental Protection, just...
Mike, you there? Okay, so we've lost Mike Novak for the moment. Hopefully we can get him back on. It is about break time anyway, so we're going to go ahead and take a break. Oh, and there's that Skype noise. We know it's not good. All right, everybody, please keep sticking around here. 773-763-9278. We'd love to hear from you and try and get some answer your questions here. Stay tuned. It's WCPT AM and FM and the Mike Novak Program.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Mike often talks about the economic value of trees, but the human response to trees can be even more important. We feel serene, peaceful, restful, and tranquil in a grove of trees. We are at home there. The calming effect of nearby trees and urban greening can significantly reduce workplace stress levels and fatigue, calm traffic, and even decrease the recovery time needed after surgery. Trees can also reduce crime. Apartment buildings with high levels of green space have lower crime rates than nearby apartments without trees. Because of their potential for long life, trees are frequently planted as living memorials. We often become personally attached to trees that we or those that we love have planted. The strong tie between people and trees is often evident when community residents speak out against the removal of trees to widen streets or rally to save a particularly large or historic tree. Invite the certified arborists at The Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com, find them on Facebook, or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
It is Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM, a special edition of the Mike Novak Show. He is live in D.C., and hopefully we got him here. Mike, are you there? Mike Novak, hello. Okay, still nothing on Mike Novak, so I guess it's all up to us. Rick DeMaio can't bail us out here. So Sarah Vodka is with us.
Okay.
Also, Rob is here as well. Rob, I've never got your last name before, buddy. What is it? Do you mind?
Carthol.
Rob Carthol. Well, thank you. And, Sarah, I don't know anything about gardening.
Well, I wanted to let listeners know about some really cool upcoming events. The Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee is going to be hosting a natural landscaping seminar on Saturday, February 23rd, out in Crystal Lake. And you can register now. And there's going to be Catherine Zimmerman that's going to be presenting on native habitats, and Dr. Orly Chip Taylor about monarch conservation. So that'll be really, really interesting. So if you're not going to the Connecting Chicago's Community Gardeners FabCon at Center for Green Technology on the 23rd, this, and you're out in the western northwest suburbs, you can find the information at www.thewppc.org. And of course, we'll put that information up on Facebook and Twitter for you as well.
Okay, fantastic. And Rob, you and Mike, now what's this thing you guys talk about?
The Connecting Community Gardeners Conference at the Center for Green Technology, which is next Saturday, as we just mentioned. It is of, for, and by community gardeners in Chicago. There's some concerns with the closing of the Department of the Environment and the reduced role the Green Corps is playing in the city. There's some concern with community gardeners. Oh, you know, what are we going to do? Oh my gosh, nobody's going to be here to give us these free plants. But, you know, we're putting this conference together for people to come together and realize that we can all come together and take care of ourselves. We can all kind of step it up another notch and take over some of these roles and, you know, kind of act as a resource for ourselves. It's, you know, going to be basically a networking event, a community organizing event, but there also will be there'll be a very exciting panel discussion to start off the day with Ron Walford from Extension and several other guests of note. And I think it's going to be a big event and be pretty good. We're about getting pretty close on capacity so far. I know we've got close to 200 have already signed up.
Okay. I think we got Mike here, but real quick, how can people find out more or, you know, get involved in this?
How can they? I think are we linked on the Neighborspace website?
I'm not certain, but you guys have a Facebook page, right? We can find you at Connecting Chicago Community Gardeners on Facebook, and you can register on Eventbrite.
All right. Okay. Great, great. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I think we're here. Can you hear us?
Yep, we can hear you loud and clear, buddy.
Oh, man, we had a little hotspot failure here, which happens. We have, how many, 6 different battery packs, and we finally found one at work. So we're back. So I don't know what you got. What was the last thing you heard from us?
Well, we were talking to their guest there, and it just kind of cut out, and, he just kind of freaked out and started talking.
Let's start with our friends from Pennsylvania.
Hi. My name is Rebecca Roeder, and I'm from Susquehanna County, Pennsylvania, which is a very active gas field. We sit right on top of the Marcellus Shale. Drilling started for us about 6 years ago, so the ship has sailed for us. We can't say no fracking now because we're dealing with the impacts on our water, air, real estate values. People are starting to get sick from air pollution. We have with us here today Tammy Manning, who's behind me, and Tammy has impacted well water from drilling.
Let's find out about that.
How do we find out?
No. I just wanted to describe what happened.
I flushed the toilet December 6, 2011, and our water was a dark gray. And
You've got a jug there. Is that the water from?
That's Dimmick water. Ours was similar.
Is that water pulled out of a well? Can I see that, sir? Okay, we got. All right, this looks like. Come over here, sir. What?
She's the one with the.
Yeah, but what I want to know what you call this.
Yeah, that's from Dimmick, Pennsylvania. We call it Dimmick lemonade or Cabot Kool-Aid.
Now, does this Cabot have an odor to it?
It has odors. It has chemicals in it. It's not just discolored.
So what do you do to drink water these days?
The homes that are there have to live on a water buffalo. Tammy's got one, too.
What's a water buffalo?
550 to 1,100-gallon tank where they require water to be delivered to it every day to have water at their homes. There's a person living with it right there.
At what cost to the residents?
Who never get replacement water. There's an 80-year-old man, Max Chilson, who lives in French's Island, Bradford County. His water was impacted almost 2 years ago. He has well pads 1,200 and 1,800 feet from his house. He had diesel in his water, heavy metals. He never got replacement water. And, you know, he's
He's gotten sick from the fracking, all of the chemicals blowing up to his home and the silica, and he's basically on his own. So citizens have been taking him drinking water. So not everybody gets replacement water because the industry doesn't want to, they don't admit that this is their responsibility. I would also add that air is also impacted, and Frank Finnan, who's over here, has done a lot of work with a FLIR camera, which optically images gas emissions from compressor stations, well pads. And he was exposed. He's been getting sensitized to flares at wellheads. And 3 weeks ago, he was around a flare in Susquehanna County, and he's having some health issues. Frank?
And well, before we get to Frank, just 1 second. I just want to explain this jug of water I'm holding. Looks like orange Kool-Aid. Okay, it looks like
drilling too. That's from a vertical drilling of a well. They hadn't even fracked yet. So you don't have to have hydraulic fracturing to have water impacts to your well water. I would also add that, you know, pipeline.
All right. Reoccurring situation here as we are back here in the studio.
This is horrifying.
Drinking water and also drilled wells.
Okay, hold on a second. Have we lost you?
No, we can hear you loud and clear. Well, We just did, and right when we said that, we lost them again. We will be back with Mike Novak, who is doing an awesome job via Skype in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital.
We're back. Oh, are you there, Dave?
Yeah, we are back. Lisa, how's it going?
All right. Good. Sorry.
You know, it's just one of the hazards of a live broadcast, as Rick DeMaio said, when you're out on the mall and you don't have an electric connection. You know, you're just relying on batteries and hotspots and that sort of thing. You know, Sarah asked a really good question back at our studio in Chicago. And by the way, let's let folks know that this is Mike Novak. I'm with Lisa Albrecht. We're on the mall in Washington, D.C. More and more people showing up. We're talking to some folks who are here from Pennsylvania about fracking.
Talking to folks in Pennsylvania about fracking, Mike was going to say, as he's at the convention there in D.C. And we have lost the connection with Mike. We'll try and get back with him momentarily. Oh, okay. That's a very interesting noise that Skype makes. I've learned that.
This is so sad. This reminds me of, you know, the Aaron Brockovich movie. Like,
exactly.
Big corporations poisoning residents, doing it knowingly. And who is the gal, Autumn Smith, saying that Enbridge was having residents sign waivers, releasing them of liability? I mean, it just makes the hair all over my body stand up.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Any comments on that, Rob?
Well, it's, you know, what are, and you were, you know, saying, what's the cost to the residents? You have to, now you don't even have clean water to drink. So who's, you know, is anybody else stepping up and taking care of that for you? Or no, that's not happening.
Well, they were saying for the 80-year-old resident, you know, neighbors were pitching in, bringing him drinking water because he doesn't have that water buffalo. He doesn't have a plan B. Like, mm-hmm. This is it, and we're all in it together. So we have to help each other out and let our legislators know that we are not going to stand for this. We need clean water. We need clean air. And this is a human right.
And these are all the immediate effects too. I mean, these are just the immediate effects of all this drilling. Is like, we don't have clean water right away. What are the long term effects?
We're back here, guys.
All right.
I'm not sure if one of the things that Rebecca was pointing out was that this is not horizontal fracking. It was vertical fracking. And so for a long time now, people have said that that's the distinction. So
they hadn't even fracked. It was just vertically drilled.
It was vertical drilling.
It was supposed to be a horizontal well, but during the vertical drilling, which is what's going on right by my house right now, is the vertical drilling before they turn the bore. That's when this particular water well was impacted with methane migration. And it's usually not just methane. You get other things like heavy metals and salts.
And the question that Sarah in the studio asked was, how much extra are you spending to have fresh water brought in?
Well, my water hasn't been impacted yet. However, Tammy Mannings, her water was impacted. WPX, the driller, is providing them with replacement water. They bring in the water bottle.
So they.
That's a very rare occasion. Most people never get replacement water because what happens in our state is the drillers do not admit ever that the drilling
impacted drinking water. They don't do that. That's probably a legal issue also because, you know, they would be admitting culpability. But also, as far as most people never get replacement water.
So that's the part that's the most disturbing.
DEP, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, hardly ever sends out a determination letter finding the driller responsible. When they do that, then there's a stronger case for requiring that the driller provide replacement water. That happened in Dimmock, but I think they're trying to undo that. And actually, Craig Stevens could speak to that very well because Craig got involved with when Cabot stopped delivering water to people impacted in Dimmock, where DEP required that Cabot bring in replacement water. Once they met the conditions laid out by DEP to the consent order, then DEP said, okay, fine, you don't have to deliver water anymore. But the water was still not drinkable. And so citizens had to come together to provide drinking water for themselves. And Craig can speak about that. But most people do not have replacement water. And there's a lot of old people, a lot of people, like we know somebody in Susquehanna County, she was melting snow because she has bad impacted water and has no replacement water. She has four kids living at her house. This is this is normal for us. So don't let it happen in Chicago.
What is the government doing? I mean, why is the government not involved in this? I wish our listeners could see and we'll post pictures.
Our governor says that there are no problems. There are no problems that he's aware of.
Well, then invite him for dinner. Well, make some pasta, something you boil.
Like the Simpsons episode.
He was given $900,000 by the Marcellus Shale Coalition lobby money. Money talks. So I feel that the entire state body in Pennsylvania has been hijacked by corporate interests. There's been a power shift from the public government sector to the private corporate sector to the point where the head of our DEP is run by a judge, a lawyer who comes out of the energy industry. He doesn't have an environmental background. 2 months ago, the head of the Pennsylvania Department of Health, who was a doctor, was forced to resign and replaced with a man who has an MBA. The Department of Health was not taking any anecdotal health complaints up until about 6 months ago, and I just thought that they weren't taking it. So when I tried to call about a sinus infection I got and was told we're not taking them, I figured, okay, fine, don't call. That's not true. They are supposed to be taking them, but they don't want to document it. The state doesn't want to document things because then they can say it doesn't exist. So that's why we're here. We are documenting. We want to bring our documentation and our story to the rest of America because industry wants to frack every country in all of America.
Right.
And it's too late for us to stop this from happening to us. But we can, by speaking about it and documenting it, we can stand witness and help you stop this from happening to your water, your air, and your family.
Right, because first of all, I want to ask a question. Are you hearing us in the studio?
Gotcha.
Okay, good, because you know, I hear weird sounds, and sometimes we've been dropping out, so I want to make sure you're getting this. And the point here is that in Illinois, we haven't even come up with those laws yet. We're at a point where they're looking at, and there's a land rush going on in southern Illinois right now.
It doesn't matter if you come up with a law. Laws don't matter. They have to be enforced. They're being absolutely not enforced in Pennsylvania, not enforced anywhere. That's the problem is the industry buys off everybody. They are the best at buying off everybody.
They lie.
They'll lie, cheat, and steal, do whatever they can. My water's not impacted. I'm a sixth-generation landowner. My sons are the seventh generation. But I saw what happened in Dimmock. Dimmock's water went like this. Everyone said it was fine. The industry does.
And he's holding up the orange water there when he speaks
so
about that.
We have Dimmock. We have Franklin Porch. We have Lennox. We have everybody.
Okay, well, Frank's got the sign, and he's moving on. Listen, we need to take a break in the studio. I want to thank you all for coming here and for, you know, standing up for your rights.
Tell them to Google List of the Harmed, LISTOFTHEHARMED. Over 800 people all over the country with contamination issues that nobody's listening to.
And I understand in some states you can be sued for claiming that your water is contaminated. Have you seen that in Pennsylvania?
Not yet, but they just ignore it. You can call in with any kind of problems. We're wondering why, if there's no problem, any problems with drilling. That's our issue.
Exactly. There's no problems with drilling. Why are there so many problems with drilling?
And I love the fact that your 8 and your 10-year-old are out here. I mean, we are leaving you guys the worst planet And it's really going to be up to you guys to, you know, continue this movement.
They're seventh generation owners of our family property. And if the water's destroyed, they're the seventh generation owners of my family property. If the water's destroyed, they inherit nothing but a toxic mess.
You guys, I just want to ask them a question. I'm sure you're not happy to have that water. Do you hope you make a difference here today?
Yes.
What's it like having the water? What does it look like? What does it smell like?
It's black and it kills all the
Ours is clean, but our neighbors
killed all the fish in our creek.
Did it really?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
They blew out our creek 8 times, put the pipeline in.
I'm looking at this list of the harmed. There are rashes on your legs, healthy goats, fish kills, pond contamination.
Okay, I'm talking to Sarah in the studio. She's looking at your site, and she says there are rashes that people have. And what else, Sarah?
8 healthy goats that have died, fish kills from contaminated ponds, people
fish
suffering
kills, goats, yeah.
Headaches, fatigue, nausea, blood, nosebleeds.
Wow, that's just amazing stuff. She's telling us, and she's going to let all of our listeners know about this. Listen,
pipeline accidents in the United States, that's from 1890 to 2000. Then pipeline accidents in the United States in the 21st century is from 2000 to 2012. Over 300 major incidents in pipelines in just the last 12 years. This industry is lying to all of us. Their PR people are Hill and Knowlton. They told everybody in America that smoking was safe for the last 60 years. You know you're in trouble when you have to get Hill and Knowlton to promote your industry. That's how bad they are.
As far as pipelines, we live in a rural area that FERC classifies as a Class 1 pipeline. In a Class 1 pipeline, they use the cheapest, thinnest pipeline possible. It's based upon population density. It's 10 or less inhabited homes per square mile. In a Class 1 area, there's no routine inspection of pipeline. There's no safety plan for us in case of a pipeline explosion. And the head of FERC safety said, in case of explosion of pipeline, Class 1 areas, hopefully only trees and forest burn. So our lives don't count. We are collateral damage. We are marginalized in a subpopulation, and we're Americans. This is America. We have to stand up together.
It's a sad story, and I want to thank you all for being here.
I just wanted to mention, think about where your food comes from, because most of the land being leased is farmland, and the farmers aren't getting enough money, so they're leasing their land so they can pay their taxes. And so the industry is saying, save the farm. They're saving the farms.
Getting into the milk, because we have farmers in our county, their water is impacted, they're continuing to milk, the milk is going to market, you're drinking it, and that meat is going to market too. So the chemicals that are exempt from disclosure are getting into our...
Yes, and that's one of the chief issues here. We've got to move on, but thank you so much, and I'm glad you're here for the march. Back in the studio, I know we're late for a break, so I'm going to let you guys handle that, and we'll be back more from the National Mall. This is Mike Novak with Lisa Albrecht. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are 2 quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
So here we are in the dog days of February. I'll bet you didn't even know that February had dog days. See how much you learn on this radio program? You'll learn even more if you get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Some of the best information comes from the regular features that appear in each issue. For instance, there's regional reports from southwestern Michigan, northwestern Indiana, the far western suburbs, the south burbs, and southern Wisconsin. There's also My Favorite Plant, which appears in every issue and is written by a Chicagoland gardening staffer. This issue, the favorite plant is Boltonia, an easy-to-care-for perennial that starts to look great in the late summer, just when many other plants are looking tired. Another regular feature is Mike Novak's column on the inside back page. Talk about looking tired. Hey, don't blame me. He wrote this commercial. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, on newsstands all over town. Or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. That's 888-265-3600.
It is Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM. And no, it is not weird science. It is just the technology in 2013. We are talking to Mike Novak in Washington, D.C. via Skype. Mike, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Okay, I know it's gone in and out. And you guys, I assume, have just been doing a marvelous job holding down the fort. And I really appreciate the fact that I have you in studio. And thanks for all of this. And I understand, Rob, I heard you talk a little bit about the big commie garden FabCon while we dropped it out for a while. Did you manage to get the word out about that?
We got some plugs in there. And the site is on Eventbrite, just to let people know about that.
Okay, fabulous. Right now, I have the Pastor Leo M. Woodbury from Kingdom Living Temple in Florence, South Carolina. Pastor, it's good to have you here.
Oh, great to be here, Mike.
Tell me why you're marching today.
Well, we've been involved in a lot of different environmental issues, some of us as far back as 1997. And so what we put together about 4 years ago is a coalition of 15 organizations. Some of them are faith-based, some of them are for-profit businesses, primarily people of color groups.
Mike, you may be in a hot zone there, buddy. If you can, if
you're a coal fire facility.
There we go.
Hold on a second. I think we lost the signal.
Yeah, you're back. You're back.
Are we back?
Yep.
Okay. So let's go back to the pastor. Tell us again how this got put together.
Santee Cooper wanted to build a coal fire electrical facility in an African American community, and so we came together with some other groups. And actually were able to persuade them to convince them to not build the facility. And then after that, we got involved with some other issues. So we've been working around issues of mercury, contamination of waterways and fish, working with Clemson University on biofuels and biomass, and also working, with energy efficiency, primarily in African-American community.
Do you find that these are the communities that are most affected by decisions like this?
Yes, they're most impacted. And I think part of the problem and the concern and why we're not able to organize and mobilize more people is because we've become so accustomed to talking to ourselves that we have to change the language so that everyday people can become involved in the movement. Once people understand what's going on, they generally wind up on our side. But for example, if we're carrying a sign that says stop the XL pipeline, the average person doesn't know what that is. And so we have to start organizing and mobilizing people around things like health issues, around environmental injustice, around economic inequalities and those sorts of things that people understand. So, for example, when we were dealing with the mercury issue, you know, we could go to people and say to them, you know, in the PD region of South Carolina, where Florence is, our region has one of the highest levels of respiratory illnesses and cardiovascular diseases. And we can talk about mercury and women of childbearing age and children should not consume so much fish because it causes brain damage. And when the people ask why, because we used to be able to eat as much of those types of fish as we wanted to.
And that was a way that people could feed themselves, too.
Right,
you used
right.
to be able to just, you stick the line in the water, you pull the fish out, and mm-hmm. nobody, you know, you have a fishing license, but that was about the most you paid for it.
That's right. And so then once we're able to say to people then, well, the reason why this risk exists to your children is because mercury is created by electrical utility companies. And then we could get into coal and when you tie the problems directly to people's everyday lives, we find they always wind up on our side.
You know, it's interesting you talk about we know that the minority communities are affected by these things more than other communities. What about the faith-based organizations, though? Do you find that the churches are now getting on board and understanding that it's important to take care of the earth?
Well, we've been working on that issue for 3 years. For the past 2 years, we had something called the Grass is Greener Conference. And then this past January, we had a Moving Forward Conference where we brought in people, many of them from the faith community, and talked about next steps. So on March 2nd, we're going to be meeting and using a World Cafe decision-making model to actually work on putting four programs in place for what we call the E-Power, the E-Power campaign. And then on March 22nd and March 23rd, Reverend Fletcher Harper from Green Faith is coming in from New Jersey to do a train the trainer so that we can actually get some materials and get some people out into the churches and into the pews using scripture and talking about how, you know, from the faith experience of the Jewish community and Muslim communities, we all believe that God set us as stewards of the earth. And if we are to be good stewards, we should be interested in what's going on with the earth, and we should be standing for the healing of the earth and the maintaining of the earth. So that's a good question.
Well,
that's something we're working on.
But isn't there that tension between the people who take the Bible literally and said we should exploit the earth and then the people who are faith-based now say, no, we need to protect it? How do you reconcile those two?
Well, actually, there is no scripture that says you can exploit the earth. What it says is, if you want to look, you can look.
Well, man had dominion, and then people, they take that as to say that you exploit it.
It says dominion, subdue the earth, and replenish the earth, put something back. So it doesn't say exploit the earth to its maximum, drain the earth. It doesn't say kill off the earth. It says have dominion, subdue, and replenish.
There are people who would argue.
Sure.
With,
well, there are people who believe that if it's here, it's here because God wanted us to use it. You know
to
what I mean?
Use
I have
it
heard...
and put back. And when I hear put back, that tells me renewables and sustainable energy. That's what that tells me.
Well, I agree with you. I'm not going to argue, but right. I just wanted to get that viewpoint from you.
Well, we always say use religion, exploit it, and use religion to start wars, enslave people, to colonize people. So we know that that's always something we have to look out for. But we also know that faith has always been also a very progressive force, whether you're talking about Dr. King or Gandhi or others. So it's just a matter of, like I said, that once we explain the situation to people in terms that they understand, the majority of people wind up on our side.
Well, that is the Pastor Leo M. Woodbury from Kingdom Living Temple out of Florence, South Carolina. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I'm glad you're marching.
You know, before we say goodbye to him,
yeah.
I just wanted to throw something in. Kathleen whispered in my ear that while we were interviewing others, I mentioned that there was a propaganda campaign where they, instead of telling people what fish are unsafe, that they actually have some tricks in order to kind of confuse the community? Could you elaborate a little?
Well, what we found is that we had people putting out pamphlets for fish advisory, telling people what fish they could eat and couldn't eat. But they were using a lot of scientific terms and names for the fish that
the Latin
people
names?
In the community didn't understand.
Yeah, yeah, so
they called it carb, they called it whatever.
Yeah, whatever. And then they used other terms.
I was going to say carpinus, but that's actually a tree. But, you know.
And your listeners would know.
No, they wouldn't. Some of them would.
So we actually went to the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control and spoke with them, and we were able to get them to redo that and put it out in language.
That's so amazing, though, that they would put them in Latin. People don't know what's going on, and then you have to interpret for folks.
Well, the fishing industry is very big in South Carolina. It's part of the tourism industry. And so, it's not very profitable to tell people that you have limits on the numbers of fish that you can not only catch but also consume.
All right. Well, we got to let you go, Pastor.
Thank you very much, Mike. You're doing a great job. We appreciate everything that you do.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing and everybody else here. And have a great march, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. I know we're getting on here. I know that we've got Dave on the line from San Francisco, but we're not going to get to him yet. I'm going to let you guys break one more time because I know you need to do that. And then when we return, we'll take Dave's call and we'll wrap things up. Lisa Albrecht and Mike Novak live from the National Mall, right in front of the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C., for the Forward on Climate March. I guess I haven't said that enough, but if you're not here already, you're probably not going to get here. I will tell people, though, that if you can get downtown in Chicago, there's still a chance to participate in that march. And if you're listening elsewhere in the country, there are marches all over in many different cities. This is Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
It is WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and the Mike Novak Show. Please stick around, everybody. More to come.
There are lots of ways your family can avoid the flu.
Like moving to a distant island for the entire flu season.
But the best way is to get your family vaccinated against flu.
Flu can be serious for everyone, even really healthy people.
Young kids and older people are especially at risk.
So is anyone with a health condition like asthma or diabetes.
That's why everyone 6 months and older should get a flu vaccine every year.
It's easy.
A lot easier than moving to a distant island.
Find a nearby place to get vaccinated at flu.gov.
Brought to you by HHS.
This is WCPT's Art of the City Spotlight. We let you know what's happening in the theater, music, and literary arts, and what you can do to get involved and support the arts in the Chicago metro area. The spotlight shines on street-level youth media, educating Chicago's urban youth in media arts and emerging technologies for use in self-expression, communication, and social change. Street Level's programs build critical thinking skills for young people who have been historically neglected by public policymakers and mass media. Using video and audio production, graphic design, digital photography, and internet-based skills, street-level youth address community issues, access advanced communication technology, and gain inclusion in our information-based society. For more info, visit street-level.org or check out Planet WCPT on Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com. You can also hear more Art of the City on Our Town, Sunday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m.
This is the Weekend Home for All Those Shows, Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT, AM and FM. You're listening to the Mike Novak program. He is live in D.C. Mike, are you there?
I am here. Are you there?
We are here.
All right, great. We are starting to wrap this up. And Lisa and Albrecht and I are here. And things, as you can hear in the background, are you catching that music back there?
I believe not.
Oh, you don't hear the music? No, all right. I just thought maybe you could hear the band behind us. Well, that's probably a good thing because it's getting pretty loud. Did Dave want to talk to us in San Francisco?
Yeah, he sure did. We got him on the line here. Let's go ahead and grab him. Dave, you're on.
Hey, greetings. Hi, Mike. I wanted to, since Chicago has got the Board of Trade out there, I wanted to raise the XL pipeline as it regards agricultural prices. A lot of people don't realize that the technology of the XL pipeline is going to basically steal water all the way down from Canada all the way down to Texas. you know, they're taking this nasty sludge, putting it in a pipeline, and then they add water, basically 28 gallons of water for every 1 gallon of fuel produced. So if they want 1 billion gallons of fuel, they're going to have to use 28 billion gallons of water that they'll highly pollute. And when you look at the costs to agriculture of stealing 28 billion gallons of water out of the Midwest, they're talking about basically ruining the crops throughout the Midwest. So I would urge the members of the Chicago Board of Trade to come down against the XL pipeline because of this enormous waste of water.
Well, that's a really good point, Dave. And the other is that fracking does the same thing. Fracking uses enormous amounts of water.
And millions of gallons. Millions of gallons.
And we're in a situation where we're in a drought in many states, and the water levels are low as it is. And as you mentioned, we're taking this resource that we don't get back. You know, if once you contaminate it, it's pretty hard to restore. And it's a really good point, Dave, and I appreciate the fact that you're listening and you called in. So
yeah, well, we've
thanks a lot. Go ahead.
We've got the West Coast Stock Exchange out here, so I'm trying to do the same for them. But the point of this 28 billion gallons of polluted water is going to end up in Texas, where they have basically no environmental laws. So what are they going to do with 28 billion gallons of polluted water? You know, so it's a stupid plan all the way around.
Yeah. we'll be talking more about this, Dave. I appreciate the phone call. Yeah.
Mike, are you there?
Have a great Sunday.
Great. Yeah, Dave is gone, and we are about to wrap it up here, Mike.
Got to be able to hear us now.
They just cranked it up. You must be able to hear. Can you hear me at all?
Yeah, we can hear you. We can't hear that band, though. I'm
no.
sure they're great.
Oh, you can or cannot?
Cannot.
Hear the band.
Cannot.
Oh, that's amazing, because I can't even hear myself think right now. They have cranked up the volume so loud right behind us. Well, anyway, I want to thank you guys. I want to thank Lisa Albrecht for being with me here in Washington, D.C. I want to thank Denny Sheeter and Sarah Batka and Rob Carthall, and again, Mike Sanders and Matt Cummings for helping put this together, Mac Austin and Kathleen Thompson, who were corralling people like troopers here. They've just done a great job. And I want to thank all the people who have come out to march.
Because we're behind the soundstage. We're looking out into the listeners from all kinds of states, all kinds of cities. And it's just exciting to see everybody here all for one cause.
So we're going to say goodbye. I know you guys are wrapping up. And I will see you when I get back into Chicago, and so will Lisa. Have a great Sunday, you folks in the studio. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Lisa.
I can't go home more.
So 1, 2, 3, take my hand and come with me, because you look so fine that I really want to make you mine.
And a big thank you to Mike Novak as well, from all of us here at the board. Our very first Skype cast. That was interesting. And for Mike Novak, as he always says, go green.
Go home.
Thanks, Mike Novak.